Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is Michael Scollin, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Welcome, Mike. It's good to have you on the show.
Welcome.
All right. Well, there should be one more edition of this podcast before the new year. But today we're going to talk about two challenges that Russia is facing going into 2020 and beyond, very far beyond in at least one case. That one is climate change. The possibly shorter term challenge is the persistent recurring or reemerging doping scandal that is threatening to keep Russia out of the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo next summer. Now, let's discuss the second one first. Mike, you did a story on Russia's doping problems that I think is going up on the website later this week, and you've been following the issue. Now, it's kind of fast-moving, and there are a lot of committees involved, WADA, RUSADA, and more. But as far as I understand, the situation now pretty much is that on December 9th, the World Anti-Doping Agency's Executive Committee, the WADA Executive Committee, endorsed a measure banning Russia from competing in the Tokyo Olympics, and in fact, from competing in all major sporting events for the next 4 years. And now Russia is preparing to argue that call or considering whether it will appeal. Mike, is that about right? Tell us a little about how we got here or how Russia got here and also how it looks in 2020. Does Russia have any chance of competing as a team in Tokyo?
Yes, it's very complicated. At this point, it appears that Russia will not compete as a team in Tokyo, but there are avenues for appeal, and it's all being worked out. One thing that's happening in the near term, actually tomorrow on Christmas Eve, is that RUSADA, the founders' board of RUSADA, the Russian anti-doping agency, will discuss whether to appeal the ban, which would then go to arbitration at an international level.
Mm-hmm.
So RUSADA's supervisory board met last week, and they recommended that Russia will appeal. And it looks like we're heading that way. We've had President Putin last week during his end-of-the-year press conference. He basically indicated that that the WADA ban was unjust.
Mm-hmm.
One argument is that basically it's not fair to have collective punishment. Basically, you know, if you're going to suspend anybody, it should be at an individual basis.
Right.
And it looks like we're heading toward an appeal, which will set off another round of another round of discussions and go to arbitration. Russia would have to determine what their legal argument would be. They would have to choose their lawyers, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Back to your question about whether we'll see Team Russia play in Tokyo, probably not. In any case, we will probably see Russian athletes perform. Because there are avenues where they can compete as neutral athletes. You might recall back in Rio in 2016 and in the Winter Olympics in 2018, Russian athletes did perform as individuals and in team sports, but as athletes of Russia. They're not allowed to compete under the Russian flag,
right.
No anthem. Officials are not going to be allowed to attend matches. Russia cannot even bid for future major sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, it's complicated because it does not mean we won't see Team Russia on the field or in the arena assuming that this ban goes through over the next 4 years, because there are other sporting events that are not considered major sporting events.
Oh, I see.
Such as the Euro 2020 next year, which Russia will be hosting. This ban only affects international sporting events, not smaller, lower level competitions. The Euro 2020, for example, is a European competition, so
right.
You will see Team Russia there, but you won't see them if the ban goes through in the World Cup, for example.
Right. Okay. I guess I have one question about what Putin said, and I think he said it more than once, is you can't, collective punishment is bad. He's repeated that. But, I wonder what people who would counter that would say. Isn't it true that the whole problem, at least from WADA's point of view or from almost the international communities, is that this was found to be a state-sponsored doping program in the first place? So how can you talk about punishing the individual when it's the state that's kind of behind the whole thing? Whereas I guess it's just a little bit, I'm just wondering if that's sort of a disingenuous argument on his part, and or maybe it's different with the new problem that they're facing with the doping samples that's been the cause of the ban that's being proposed this year.
That is one of the major bones of contention. There are many that argue outside of Russia, that collective punishment is the only way to send a really serious message to get Russia to clean up its state-sponsored doping program.
Right.
Russia doesn't accept that it ever had a state-sponsored doping program. So
right.
That puts them at loggerheads. But, WADA has increased powers. The anti-doping code was recently updated. That gives them the power to not just recommend punitive action, but to actually ban Russia. And they, through their investigations, have determined that it was a state-sponsored doping program. The database you referred to, that is basically at the center of this scandal.
Mm-hmm.
WADA is not happy with what it received from Russia.
Right.
Russia says that that what it sent was genuine. WADA said that it was manipulated. So you have many athletes who are calling for collective punishment.
Right.
As a way to force Russia to finally come clean. The counter argument would be that some of these individuals, they never doped.
Right.
They're clean. Why should they be punished for somebody else's actions? It's basically exactly what Putin said last week.
Mm-hmm. But in the end, those. What it seems most likely to happen is that in Tokyo there won't be, Team Russia competing under the Russian flag, but there will be some athletes who have shown themselves to be clean competing there, who are Russian.
Right.
So in a way, I guess that does seem like the most likely outcome at this point. Is that right?
Yes, I would say that's right. From the people I've spoken to, the onus will be on the athletes to prove themselves clean, and it will be more difficult this time around because they will have to basically be able to prove that they were not affected by the state doping program dating
right.
back to 2014,
right.
which isn't so easy to do. But it looks like that's where we're heading.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike. We'll see what happens this summer and with other events over the next 4 years. It doesn't look like this is going to really go away very soon. Now let's move on to this other longer-term challenge, climate change. I believe Putin said, again, at his press conference that it does pose problems for Russia, quite serious ones, but that Moscow, I'm not sure whether he said this, but apparently Moscow is also looking to capitalize on global warming. It has a long northern coast. Mike, tell us a little bit about how Russia is hoping to take advantage of climate change.
Well, as Putin, this is another complicated subject that Putin touched on briefly in his press conference last week. Putin is not going to spend a lot of time trying to determine who or what is responsible for climate change. He has gone on record before saying, like, we're going to try to adapt to it. And last week he said, we're going to try to minimize the effects. Mm-hmm. But taking that realist approach that there is climate change, and we've seen a number of things happen in Russia that that officials and others have attributed to climate change, forest fires, floods.
Mm-hmm.
We've got ice breaking up in the Arctic. But there are things that Russia sees, areas where it can benefit from that. One is the Northern Sea Route, which Russia sees as a potential cash cow. And they are gearing up to make full advantage of this route, which runs along the northern coast of the Russian shore and potentially could, or this is how it's being sold, mm-hmm. could potentially lower the cost for global shipping and basically generate a lot of money. I think Rosatom, which is running kind of the show in the Arctic right now,
mm-hmm.
And has invested heavily in a fleet of nuclear powered icebreakers. I think the figure, they see $5.6 billion in it by 2026.
Okay.
So they want to take advantage of the open waters.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of money is being put behind it. And in order to make this work, they need to do a few things. One is they need to have the seas open. And if they're not open, by themselves, they're going to break them open with mm-hmm. with these new icebreakers, which Russia already has a formidable fleet of icebreakers. Now they're going to have world class, the largest, the most powerful icebreakers in mm-hmm. the world. They also have to protect the shipping lanes, so they've got a huge military push in the far north and far east to protect these shipping lanes. They're going to have missile defense. They installed some S-400 missile defense batteries. They want a whole missile defense dome. They've got let's see, what else did they do here? They have a new icebreaker themselves, just an armed icebreaker in the military. They've got military exercises going on that include the Arctic Theater. And they also need to make sure that there's enough cargo to go to and fro.
Right.
That means oil and gas, mostly, and minerals. So they're also putting a big push on investment in infrastructure in the far north and in the far east to tap into oil reserves, to tap into new liquefied natural gas reserves. So that they can keep these container ships filled and going around the world.
So, I mean, what do you think? It sounds like Russia's putting quite a lot of sort of resources and hope, I guess, in this idea. I mean, do you think other countries with Arctic that share the Arctic are doing as much? Or I believe there's some concern in the U.S. and others, that there might be falling behind on this?
Well, definitely icebreakers are a great example. The rest of the world is woefully behind. I mean, it's not even close. I think the United States has one working icebreaker, and a few have been commissioned. There's another one that they use for spare parts. Russia has a huge fleet, right? Mm-hmm. And they've also indicated that, you know, they don't need anybody else to help them patrol the Arctic. So even if they're opening it up to international shipping, you know, they want to take advantage of yeah. this. There have been increased efforts, I think, by other countries to get involved in the Arctic. NATO has had military exercises that involved the Arctic theater for the first time, and they plan on doing so again. And certainly other countries are trying to capitalize on the reality that, you know, things are changing in the North as
right.
well.
Mm-hmm.
But Russia seems to be really putting a big push on it. I mean, they've had an Arctic strategy that was signed in 2008 when Dmitry Medvedev was president. They're re-upping that. It runs out in 2020, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they're working on a new strategy that will get them to 2035.
Right.
Again, it puts a lot of emphasis on infrastructure. When you have melting permafrost, a lot of the infrastructure is being damaged.
Yeah.
And again, on oil and gas, Russia's going to reach a peak oil situation here pretty quickly. So to keep these container ships filled and their oil exports up, they need new oil sources. So
yeah.
they're putting a big push on it. One difference that they seem to be making here, though, is they seem to be trying to spur private investment,
right?
By giving tax breaks. So rather than federal funding all these initiatives, they're kind of putting not pressure, but basically they're looking to state companies to kind of put some investment
right,
there in
yeah.
exchange for tax breaks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Putin's government kind of does that with big projects. So it sounds like, I mean, it's very interesting. It sounds like there's kind of a question, at least for me, about whether, I mean, you have, as you said, peak oil, so, and then you have the negative effects for Russia of permafrost melting, but then they're looking for this big development. So, you know, interesting to see how that all plays out and you know, whether in the end it's more of a positive or more of a negative. And also, obviously, you know, with the defense and military situation, you know, certainly something to watch going into the future. All right. Let's wrap it up for today. Mike, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Tune in next week for the last edition of this podcast in 2019. Happy holidays, and thanks for listening.